This is Logan Sekula. We have breaking news. President Trump announces the date of meeting with Kim Jong-un.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulo Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. And now, your host.
Logan Sekulo sitting in for my dad today. He's out. I like to say he's out on assignment. That makes me feel good every time. He's out on assignment, and he's out. But we do have some breaking news today, and that is President Trump tweeted out this morning a specific date and time, not time, but specific date and place of where he'll be meeting with North Korea's Kim Jong-un. Something that, if you had told us this 6 months ago, a year ago, gosh, a couple of years ago, this would be absurd. You never thought that this would happen. But now we have so much movement in North Korea over the last few months that it's really outstanding. And it's sometimes hard to believe it's true. I mean, just think about where we were a couple of years ago. Think where we were a year ago with this administration, if you want to call it that, in North Korea. Here's what he tweeted. He said, the highly anticipating meeting between Kim Jong-un and myself will take place in Singapore on June 12th. We will both try to make it a very special moment for world peace. And I'm joined in the studio by Wes Smith, Harry Hutchinson. We also have Than Bennett in our D.C. office. But Wes, as a military person, someone who spent time in South Korea, mm-hmm. is this even fathomable? I mean, it's so shocking. I think it's getting underplayed.
It is. It's unprecedented. And in fact, just from a historical point of view, no U.S. president has ever met with the leader of North Korea. It's never happened.
Ever.
3 or 4 months ago, the Democrats and the progressive media, they were accusing President Trump of bringing us to the brink of nuclear war with North Korea, that he was too hard on them, that he was, you know, really screwing the whole affair up, that the results were going to be dismal and tragic. And here we are, a date and a time set in Singapore, which is a parliamentary republic in the Pacific, and hostages are freed.
Right. Immediately after the hostages are freed, they were there. Last night, they got in town at 2 a.m., I believe, or between 2 and 3 in D.C. The president met them, and you're seeing the photo right now if you're watching online. Mm-hmm. Just a remarkable photo, and as someone who's followed it decently close, mm-hmm. it's just shocking, because not only is he agreeing that we are cool with agreeing to meet with Kim Jong-un, that we've seen such progress in such a short period of time.
Yeah, and Mike Pompeo apparently has really established a relationship with Kim Jong-un. They've met twice for extended periods of time. As you said, it's unfathomable that it's actually taken place.
Yeah, we're taking your phone calls. I want your thoughts on this. I know, look, some people are going to come into this. You've got to be skeptical. You got to have your guard up a little bit. You can't forget what happened. It's the same, if you look at when Reagan met with like Gorbachev, these people, you can't forget what's happened the last decades, but you can at least see what's happening moving forward. And phone lines are open right now for you guys to call 1-800-684-3110. Now, it is interesting to see how the mainstream press has taken this, because you think this is something where, and until really yesterday, and still very rarely, the negativity was pretty low. Everyone was pretty happy with this. People are calling for the president to get the Nobel Peace Prize. I mean, he's at least somewhat up for it, especially if this all happens and we see this, you know, final sort of, you know, goodwill gesture and goodwill move from North and South Korea. It's really remarkable. But you were saying yesterday, or just this morning, that CNN and some of the other sources were kind of spinning it, mm-hmm. and saying that last night, you know, the president met the hostages that were released, as you'd expect him to do. Or even somewhat, you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning, you got up 2 o'clock in the morning, got out to the airport, met them as they were stepping off the plane. But you're saying that they were saying he was grandstanding.
Oh yeah. They really make a huge stretch to try and take the celebration of three Americans getting their freedom from an oppressive regime to make it a negative story. And they said the president was showboating because he met them at the airport at 2 o'clock in the morning.
And there's a lot more going on. We're going to discuss this more with Dr. Harry Hutchinson, who is here with Than Bennett, who's in our D.C. office. We also have breaking news coming out of Iran and Israel. We're going to discuss that as well as we head into the next segment. Again, phone lines are open. If you want to talk about any of those, if you know what's happening in Iran, we'll discuss that and what's happening with Israel right now. You can call in about that as well as what's happening in North Korea. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. You can always get your comments in on social media. I'll be taking some of those. If you're watching us online right now on Facebook, that's at facebook.com/JaySekulo. Twitter and Periscope @JaySekulo. We'll be right back.
The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. As you know, Pastor Andrew is facing charges of, quote, Christianization, on trial for simply living out his Christian faith. He could spend the rest of his life in a Turkish prison. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're aggressively advocating for Pastor Andrew's freedom. We've mobilized our international offices. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved, and we've submitted a critical legal document to the United Nations. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at aclj.org. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks, from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live again. This is Logan Sekulow sitting in for my dad for the next hour. Thank you for joining us. I know that it's a different point of view and a different a voice, but we're coming at it with some really interesting news, and that is, of course, what we broke earlier, just the beginning of this show, which was that the president announced a date of meeting with Kim Jong-un. Again, that's going to happen on June 12th in Singapore, and what that means for us moving forward. Now, Than, I'm going to ask you this. In D.C., what are the feelings of people? Because we have seen maybe the most bitter split between the left and the right in our memory, you know, at least in modern day. What are feelings on this specific topic when it comes to North Korea?
Well, on North Korea, Logan, I just don't think there's really any way you can come to any conclusion but that this is one of the most significant foreign policy breakthroughs in our lifetime. I mean, we talked about this some in the break, but if any of the foreign policy issues that you talked about, whether it's Iran or Israel or the ISIS capture, if that was the only news story, Logan, it would be a significant foreign policy achievement. But when you just look at North Korea and you have a situation where the leader there has put denuclearization on the table, where the leader there has pursued a summit with President Trump, and now that's been scheduled for June 12th in Singapore. And then, Logan, just a few hours ago, a few miles away from here, three hostages landed with Secretary Pompeo. The President of the United States greeted them. I mean, I think you said that no one seems as shocked as you did. Logan, that's because a matter of weeks ago, no one thought that any progress with North Korea was possible. And now we have had all of this. So I think you're probably going to see a fair amount of silence on the left in Washington, D.C. But what that tells me is that there is no room for attack when it comes to the foreign policy that the president has engaged in North Korea.
Right. And something that Will put in our we have a chat. We talked back and forth. Will is our producer, that he actually gave me a headline or a line from North Korean press. Like what we said on here, not exactly the most free press. Not only do you see a lot of unbiased journalism coming out of it. And they actually said that Kim's move to grant the three Americans amnesty came at the official suggestion of the U.S. President, President Trump. So the fact they're even willing to admit that when you've seen some of the crazy claims that have been made over the years in the press in regards to their leadership, to the point where it's been parodied thousands of times because of how absurd some of these claims are, to them admit that, yeah, we took this at the word of the United States, who we've not exactly been the most friendly with the last, I don't know, since our existence. It's pretty wild. Let's hear this, though, clip. This is from Vice President Pence about, you know, kind of the president's strategy when it comes to North Korea. Take a listen.
From very early in this administration, President Trump changed the policies of the United States from an era of strategic patience with North Korea to move toward the kind of campaign that would bring economic and diplomatic pressure to bear while reserving all other options, to see these three Americans come off the plane. We hope it is a sign that this is a real opportunity to achieve peace on the Korean Peninsula.
And I think he's absolutely right. You're seeing that. I think most of our calls right now are on North Korea. We're going to stick to that. We are going to talk more about what's happening, though, also with Israel and Israel striking Iran and going back and forth and what's been going on there, because there is some tension happening in the Middle East. And I don't want to just breeze past that due to some successes that are happening in another part of the world. But I do think it's important. I think it's important to, you know, celebrate your little achievements and help move forward. And it's not such a little achievement.
It's not a little achievement. We have technically been at war with North Korea for 68 years. 68 years this June. And there has been no progress. There has been a lot of posturing. Korea has played us. North Korea has played us many times. And there is, as you said earlier, Logan, you know, we need to be cautious. We don't know ultimately how this will end up. They could try to play us again. President Trump has made it clear that if they're expecting concessions up front, like we've done before, that's not going to happen, no. And that he's willing to walk away from the table. But even with that note of caution, and even if it did come unraveled later on, no president has ever come this close to establishing a true and lasting peace. This is truly unprecedented.
Yeah, if he's able to pull this off, this actually all happens.
Yes, yeah. And even if he doesn't pull it off, and hopefully
just
he will.
Just the fact the conversations are happening.
Yeah, this is unprecedented. Yeah.
Absolutely. Let's take some of the calls about this. Let's go to Daryl, who's calling in Washington on line 3. Daryl, you're on the air. Daryl, you there?
Hey, Logan, how's it going?
Hey, it's all right. How are you?
Hey, I just want to say, you know, my father fought in Korea in like 48 to 50.
Okay.
Back in there somewhere. And just the chance that we could end up winning this war after his death in 94 is
right.
Huge to me.
And that's a great comment. Obviously, thank your father for all his work and for his service in the Korean War. But Wes, that's something that I don't think even my generation really comprehended, the fact that really the Korean War still happened.
It did, you know. And
never officially.
It never ended. And they call it the Forgotten War because it did not receive the publicity of either World War II or Vietnam. And yet there were over 40,000 U.S. soldiers who died in the Korean conflict between 1950 and 1953. As opposed to, I think, 58,000 in Vietnam. So it was a major deal. People sacrificed their lives. People were wounded. People were scarred forever. And we don't talk about it very much.
No.
And
no,
yet we've been at war with them. There is no, we signed an armistice.
Right, of course.
The war did not end, technically. And from time to time, shots have been exchanged over the DMZ. But yeah, it's time for this to end. South Korea is ready for it to end. They would like to see a united Korean Peninsula. That's not in the cards right now. But if we could bring true peace and get
even
Kim Jong-un to give up his nuclear weapons and open up his country.
Right, if the borders are just open.
Yeah, his people are starving and suffering. It would be a tremendous boon for the North Korean people if this would be a success. They have actually more to gain from this than we do.
Yeah, absolutely. I know some friends that have been there who have spent time where they're on humanitarian missions, or some have produced television that was done there, you know, big events back in the 90s. They say the people, when you walk around, it looks like you're in a completely different, looks like you're in a like a zombie movie. Like, it doesn't feel real in North Korea. Once you cross that line, you go from South Korea, booming technology, everything is amazing, to a part of the world that is stuck in time, and even the people themselves are, you could tell, under some, you know, hardship. But now we're seeing some move. Now, Harry, I want to go to you, talk about sort of the president's strategy in this, and the presidential strategy going at this, kind of to end the strategic patience.
Well, I think that's a very, very good point. I think it's clear that the release of the hostages today, along with the president's decision to withdraw from the Iran nuclear deal, represents, at least in my opinion, the triumph of maximum pressure. So with the Iranian deal, the president is returning to sanctions, and we are moving away from the Obama legacy, which is grounded in strategic patience, right, and some might say appeasement. So today's release, in some sense, marks the disintegration, if you will, of the Obama foreign policy legacy. It was a very weak legacy, yet the global elites were prepared to give thunderous applause to President Obama, even though there were very few accomplishments. Right. I think President Trump is prepared to move forward, and we may see real accomplishments going forward. So I think this is a very, very hopeful day for the U.S. in the foreign policy arena.
Right, and I think when you look back at the previous administration, there are a lot of those thoughts, and a lot of people agreed with them, and you say a lot of people celebrate them because on paper, and I mean paper, in theory, it sounds very nice. It sounds like a nice way to handle the world. But when you actually come down to it, nothing gets done, nothing moves forward because you have a dictator who feels nothing, feels no need to bring anything to negotiate, no need to bring anything to the playing field. And that's not exclusive to North Korea, mm-hmm. just in the way that we were handled in the world. And to quickly see that switch flip mm-hmm. is very interesting because I grew up, my first president when I was born and throughout the first years of my life was Ronald Reagan. I have memories of it. But people always talked about that. They always talked about, you know, oh, when Reagan got in and the Iranian hostages were freed. And I really hadn't seen that in my lifetime.
Peace through strength.
Where that happened, where someone got in, shook things up real quick, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden we're seeing this massive a move. That not really happened. I mean, yes, I think there was good presidents amongst my entire life. All had strengths and weaknesses. And that's true for every president. But there hasn't been that. That is not, I never seen that, where things actually seem to change.
Yeah. To Harry's point, too, think about it. We relieved sanctions on Iran, and we'd really brought them to almost to the table of doing some hard negotiations because of sanctions. We relieved the sanctions up front, and then their true colors came out, right. that they are the malevolent influence in the world that we thought they were. On the other hand, with North Korea, they are coming to the table because under President Trump, we've actually increased sanctions. And it makes you wonder what would have happened had we kept the sanctions on with Iran. Would we have a different result as opposed to them now saying they're going to seek nuclear weapons, attacking Israel, and so on?
Right, exactly. You said showing somewhat true colors. Yeah. And it's an interesting time. We are going to discuss that coming up. I know a lot of people are asking on social media, are we going to be covering the Israeli attacks and what's happening? We will. We will get to that next. I just wanted to spend some time to celebrate what's happening with the hostages released and what's happened in North Korea and really give it the attention it deserves. But there is a lot going on in the world, and a lot of it has to do with our administration. A lot of it has to do with American politics, and we will get into that coming up in the next segment. If you have a question or a comment, we have experts here. Wes Smith, Harry Hutchinson, Than Bennett, myself, not an expert, but I'll at least ask a question for you. You can give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. We got a couple lines open, 1-800-684-3110. You can also put in a comment online, and I'm getting those sent to me. We'll be right back.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. As you know, Pastor Andrew is facing charges of, quote, Christianization, on trial for simply living out his Christian faith. He could spend the rest of his life in a Turkish prison. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're aggressively advocating for Pastor Andrew's freedom. We've mobilized our international offices. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved, and we've submitted a critical legal document to the United Nations. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at aclj.org.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. I'm Logan Sekulow, sitting in for my dad again, joining in the studio by Harry Hutchinson, by Wes Smith, and also by Than Bennett in our D.C. I want to say our D.C. Bureau. Sounds fun to say that. I like that Will said, our producer, that he likes that. It sounds a little bit more, we'll go to our D.C. Bureau with Than Bennett. Now, we've been discussing what's happening in North Korea, and I think that's great. It's something that we're seeing massive moves and massive changes. Again, if you're just tuning in, a lot of people are. The president did set that meeting June 12th with Kim Jong-un in Singapore. But I do want to, you know, not forget what else is happening in the world. We've seen quite a few big moves happen in the last 24 hours. We've seen five ISIS leaders captured. That's huge. That's another step forward. I think, again, the ISIS victory, if you will, already that's happening is also underplayed a lot in the news where you're not seeing, and ISIS from especially that someone point of view, the big global, not the global ISIS, the ISIS in the, you know, the Islamic State. You're seeing a lot of positive movements in the really the entire situation there, Harry.
Absolutely. So if we focus first on the five top ISIS officials captured by a U.S. Iraqi sting, this is a very, very important because it's likely that these individuals are simply a treasure trove of intelligence. And so if they can be successfully interrogated, we will be able to track additional ISIS targets and individuals throughout the world. As you well know, ISIS, in some sense, has morphed into an underground organization in large part because they have lost their territory in Syria and in Iraq. And so it's very, very important to interrogate these individuals and to anticipate the next move by ISIS individuals throughout the world. They're in Africa, they're in Asia, they're in Europe, and they may be in Latin America as well.
Sure.
Go ahead, and, you know, ISIS is still a threat, an existential threat to the West, to the United States. These ISIS people that were captured, one of them was the aide to al-Baghdadi, the self-proclaimed caliph or right. Islamic leader of ISIS. And the people may recall that a few weeks ago, we launched a major attack and killed a lot of ISIS fighters. That attack, to what Harry is saying, we found out where they were because of the interrogation of this aide to al-Baghdadi. We had captured him first, and through the information that we got from him, the intelligence, we were able to locate an ISIS sort of a sub-headquarters and to make that attack to kill many of them, although al-Baghdadi himself is still on the run.
That's right. Can you maybe give us an update, Wes? I think, much like I mentioned sort of how the Reagan thought process is something that I never saw in my life, we've also been living, for a lot of us that are in our 30s, living about half our life in what feels like a war in the Middle East. You know, it shifts around, but where are we in this war? Where are things actually progressing? Obviously, the attacks on ISIS, it's a different kind of war than we grew up with, because yes. Even when you see these attacks, a lot of them are, or we saw the specific attacks in Syria, they're not necessarily what we grew up watching, which is, you know, footage of soldiers and bombs and it being right. intense and different. It's just you see these little flashes and it's over. Where are things when it comes to even how technology has changed, yeah. sort of war?
We are in a state of war. The global war on terror is still ongoing. And as your dad and I have discussed on numerous occasions, it will be a multi-generational war because, as you said, they don't wear uniforms. It is asymmetrical warfare. And so the threat comes when you least expect it. Because of our security apparatus, we have fewer attacks in the United States. Plus, we don't have borders with parts of the world where ISIS fighters can come across, unlike Europe. Europe has had a lot more attacks because they can travel through Turkey and through Eastern Europe to Western Europe and launch attacks. Plus, they have a much larger immigrant population from the Middle East in France and the UK and what have you. So even though it's easy to forget that we're in a state of war with Islamic terrorism, we really are. And from time to time, it happens here. And it's very sobering, and it's a very needed wake-up call yeah. when it happens. But to your point, Logan, this war will go on for the rest of my life and possibly for the rest of your life. It is not going to end with a peace treaty or an armistice or anything like that. As long as there are people who, in the name of their God, seek to kill other people in the world, which is really what we're up against. And there is no crazy person, no crazy warrior like a warrior motivated by some misguided religion. And that's what we're up against. Because of that, there is no end in sight. So we will always sort of be on guard. And from time to time, there will be major attacks and counterattacks in this war. But this war is not ending anytime soon.
And that even brings us up to what a lot of people are commenting on. They want to know about what's happening with Israel, their attacks on Syrian targets or Syrian regions. Tell us what's happening. For those maybe who are unfamiliar, we got about 3 minutes. We will take this into the next half hour, JSEC Hill Live.
Yeah, this has the potential to really escalate. What Iran is doing is they are showing their true colors. Benjamin Netanyahu last week, when he revealed the information that his intelligence agencies had received, we know that Iran is not an honest broker, and they're very deceptive and very dangerous. But this week, with all of the diplomatic events that have been going on, and with us withdrawing from the JCPOA, Iran's president and foreign minister have said that if our European allies try to tweak the JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal, that they will immediately start enriching uranium and seek a nuclear weapon. In my opinion, they're already doing that. They're now, for the first time, attacking Israel directly from Syrian territory. They launched 20 rockets into the Golan Heights, attacking Israeli military installations. So what happened overnight is Israel counterattacked with 10 surface-to-surface missiles and then 60 air-to-surface missiles from Israeli warplanes that they purchased from the United States, by the way. And so it's the largest attack by Israel in Syria since the war in 1973. But Israel has a right to defend itself, and our European allies are coming out and saying that exactly. But just in the last 48 hours, Iran, for the first time, directly attacked Israel. Israel has counterattacked. They struck over 70 Iranian sites in southern and central Syria. And so it's a real flashpoint. Iran is flexing its muscle in light of all the events of this week, and they're showing their true colors.
Right, headed into next week, the 70th anniversary of Israel.
And
a lot of stuff happening,
the
opening of the embassy. There's a lot going on. And Will, our producer, again, brought up a point. He said, you know, we've heard Iran have been attacking Israel for years, but really it was through Hezbollah.
Yeah, through their proxies.
But now, this is direct.
It is the first time, and I don't know, I can't remember the last time, that Iran directly attacked Israel. And this morning, the Iranian leaders say that more attacks are coming against Israel. So there's the potential for real escalation there. I'm grateful this morning that the UK and Germany and France have joined the United States in asserting Israel's right to defend itself.
Yeah, I think it would do you all a favor to go take a look at a map also, so you can see how close all this is together. Because when you think of a country, you think of the United States, and you think of attacking another country, you're thinking across the ocean, these are all... I mean, it's such a small, you know, area of land.
Yes.
That I think you'd be very surprised if you're not that familiar with the map of the Middle East, of what that all looks like. All right, we're headed into the second half hour, JSEC Hill Live. If you don't get us for the full hour on your local station, one, tell them to carry us for the full hour. But if not, you'll maybe do that after the show. We got another half hour coming up immediately. You can find that on ACLJ.org, Facebook.com/JSEC Hill, Periscope and Twitter @JSEC Hill, or give us a call at 1-800-684-3110. Right back.
The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at ACLJ.org.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. I'm Logan Sekulow, sitting in for my dad as we start the second half hour of Jay Sekulow Live. I did want to start with what's in our, you know, open our heads so you guys know what we're talking about. And that is that initially, what we spoke about earlier in the show, is that the president has announced via Twitter that the, I'll just read you the tweet, the highly anticipated meeting between Kim Jong-un and myself, the president, not me, and myself, will take place in Singapore on June 12th. We'll both try to make it a very special moment for world peace. So again, some exciting news coming out of the president. That's just a few hours after the American hostages were returned home. The president met with them at 3 o'clock this morning, 2 o'clock this morning, depending on where you are, Eastern time, and was able to greet them as they came off the, in apparently pretty good shape. You know, when you think about just a year plus ago when Otto Warmbier came back, we're like, okay, this was somewhat of a move, but obviously came back in terrible shape and sadly did not make it very long. You can't forget about that. You can't say that that didn't happen, but we are seeing positive moves, and it's good. We have a couple calls on this. I want to get through these so we can also move on to other topics. We're also discussing what's happening with Israel and Iran and Syria and all of that that's happening, as well as other news. So let's go ahead and take some of these calls in the first segment. Let's go to Scott, who's calling in Indiana on line one. Scott, welcome.
Hey, I just want to make the comment that Trump is kind of like a master chess player right now. He is seeing every move as it comes and anticipating it. And that's what he's done with North Korea. That's what he's doing with Israel and Iran. He is seeing it as it comes, and I trust the man.
There you go. Good comment coming in from Scott about President, sort of his, and Harry, we talked about this a little briefly ago, sort of the changes he's made to foreign policy.
Absolutely.
And what's happening really in the last, you know, under 2 years.
Absolutely. So he is willing to act in America's direct interests. He is not worried about pleasing global elites. And as a consequence, I think he's making real progress, both in North Korea and Iran, and also in terms of strengthening our relationship with Israel and Saudi Arabia. We should not forget that Iran has launched missiles, at least their allies have launched missiles into Saudi Arabia. And so what have we gotten from the Iranian nuclear deal?
Right.
Very little. Iran has not curbed its belligerence. And secondly, I would point out the Iranian people have not benefited from the Iranian nuclear deal either.
Yeah, we have a comment that came in. Again, we're talking about what happened also with North Korea, but also what happened with Israel and their relationship with Iran and essentially a war breaking out in some ways. Tim asked, he said, is Iran even capable of handling a war with Israel?
No. I mean, that's the short answer. And
is that just due to allies? Is it due to the equipment?
No, it's due to arms. It's due to, I think, motivation. And Than can probably speak to this better than I. But Israel has a formidable military force, thanks to the United States. Certainly, we are their ally, and we have a treaty that we would help defend them if they were, you know, massively attacked. But Israel has proven over and over again since the 1960s that they are quite capable of defending themselves and defeating any of their enemies in the region.
Well, Than, he pitched to you. I'll go pitch to you. What do you think?
Well, I think Wes is correct. I mean, our Israel is capable of handling a provocation from Iran on their own. But honestly, the piece of this that makes it just not really even beyond debate, Logan, is the fact that this president has made it unequivocally clear that the United States stands with Israel. I mean, don't lose sight of the fact that on Monday is when we're moving the embassy to Jerusalem. So if there was a full-scale escalation, and of course that's not something that anyone wants, but I think Iran knows with crystal clarity where the United States would stand if that were to occur.
People ask that a lot. You know, I've spent some time in Israel, and people always ask, you know, is it unsafe? Do you feel uncomfortable? And you really don't feel that unsafe. You obviously keep your guard up, as you would anywhere in the world. But just due to the fact that you know the strength of this military force, and you definitely see it.
States, and this is not talked about much, in these Israeli attacks in Syria, we are actually providing the aircraft that block the radar for the Syrian air defense system, too.
Okay.
So we are helping them.
Let's get into that then in the next segment. Again, hey, special videos coming up in the break. If you're watching online, stay tuned. These videos are made every day by our media team. I don't want to, you know, discount that at all. They're not just magically there. Our video team puts this together each and every morning. So take a look at this exclusive video made just for you guys who watch online. If you don't get to see those, you can find us broadcasting online or you can find it archived later on. We'll be right back.
The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. As you know, Pastor Andrew is facing charges of, quote, Christianization, on trial for simply living out his Christian faith. He could spend the rest of his life in a Turkish prison. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're aggressively advocating for Pastor Andrew's freedom. We've mobilized our international offices. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved, and we've submitted a critical legal document to the United Nations. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at aclj.org. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks, from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live again. This is Logan Sekulow sitting in for my dad as he is out, as I said, on assignment. I really want to start this segment off as we just kind of got this soundbite. This is from Senator Langford. We've been talking about what happened in North Korea. Hostages freed. We don't want to lose sight of what's happening in Turkey with Pastor Brunson that we've talked about numerous times on this broadcast. I'm sure if you're familiar with this show, you know about Pastor Brunson and a pastor imprisoned in Turkey, really for doing no crime, is part of a trial right now that could go on for 10 plus years, and we are fighting to get him freed. And something you never thought you'd hear, and I don't think they thought they'd ever say, let's hear from Senator Langford a bit on this topic.
I thought I would never say this sentence, but I would like to see Turkey follow the example of North Korea and release American hostages that they're holding. Now, when Turkey, a NATO ally, is behind North Korea and how they're handling humanitarian issues, Turkey has moved to a very bad spot, and it's not a place that they need to stay.
Again, another pretty wild statement.
On the Senate floor.
Yeah. The fact that you're hearing these words that they want to, that Senator Langford said, take the lead, and I want to go to Than for this, take the lead from North Korea. You can't believe you're hearing this, Than, coming from the Senate.
Well, it's unbelievable, but Senator Langford, Logan, is absolutely correct. And look, I think it flows exactly with what we've been saying, is that this administration has instituted a consistent foreign policy. So no matter if you're a NATO ally like Turkey or a historic enemy like Iran or North Korea, what you're going to get is a consistent approach. You're going to get no concessions when you're behaving poorly. You're going to get increased pressure through things like elevated sanctions. And then you're also going to have openness to a dialogue, Logan. I mean, you look at North Korea, they are responding to our demands, and so the president's willing to meet with them. Iran is moving the other way, so that pressure continues to dial up. And Logan, Senator Langford talked about it might be the time to put some pressure on Turkey. Well, he's backing that up with actions. I know we've talked about this on this broadcast before, but the United States is threatening to cancel the sale of almost 100 F-35s to Turkey over this detention of Pastor Brunson. So, it's a weird time in our world where Turkey is behind North Korea, but he's right. They are. They're moving away while North Korea is moving towards us.
Wes, I want to get your thoughts on that. I could see the motors turning.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. I mean, this whole week has been filled with geopolitical diplomatic surprises. And in Turkey, our NATO ally is not behaving like a NATO ally. I applaud Senator Langford for saying that on the Absolutely. Senate floor. And, I was thinking about Kim Jong-un and how he is moving more towards the United States. And I've wondered, what are his motivations? Certainly the sanctions that we have levied against North Korea is biting, and that's part of the motivation. But think about this, Logan. Kim Jong-un, I think, is 30 or 32 years old.
Yep.
His father and his grandfather, when they came to power, were older men. He is looking at a long future, you know, all things being equal, as North Korea's leader. And I think perhaps some of the thinking, and you can't really get inside his head, but long term, if he were to make peace with South Korea and the United States and willingly and completely and verifiably give up his nuclear weapons and open up his country to the rest of the world, this guy could live a long and prosperous life, and he has a lot of time ahead of him. He has more of his life in front of him than he does behind them. Yeah. And I think that could be used as some of the motivation as we negotiate with Kim Jong-un, that, look, we can really make a difference, not only in the life of your nation, we can make a difference in your life if you will come to the table and be willing to give up the nuclear weapons and let us help you.
It is pretty wild that we've gotten here. And you as someone who essentially is my age, we're not exactly sure how old he is. Actually, if you look it up, there's not a clear 30, definitive.
Maybe.
He's between 33 and 35, 36 years old. We started seeing these moves at the Olympics almost. Is when the first time you actually heard of someone saying, what's happening in North Korea? Oh, his sister is sitting behind, you know, Pence. And like, at that point, it was seen very much as a negative. And we're talking about the Winter Games and not that long ago. And we've seen this movement. Let's take our call. Really, probably one of the last calls on this topic. If you do want to call in, though, 1-800-684-3110. If it's on this topic on North Korea, totally fine. Call in. But let's go to Bill in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Bill, thanks for holding.
Well, yes, sir. Good day to you. I'd like to start out by saying that because I think with all that's been happening, it is a good day. Considering all that's changed, I'm just thinking that some of this has been a schoolyard type of mentality with North Korea. You know, we'll give you our lunch money if you please don't beat us up, and I'm glad to see the change that's happened. Thank you.
Well, there you go. There's the comments coming in from Bill, and I could see how you'd feel that way because of how drastic, Harry, the shift has gone.
Absolutely. So I think President Obama's preferred approach has been to lecture dictators around the world. So when the Russians invaded Crimea, they will find out that this is a bad move, according to Obama. When other individuals engaged in belligerence, President Obama was not prepared to take offensive and direct action. President Trump is determined to respond to threats and to put America first. I think the sanctions regime placed on the North Korean dictatorship are working. That's why we should return to a sanctions regime on the Iranians as well.
All right. And with that, our phone lines are open for your comments and questions. I want to hear from you. I want to know what you think about this. I know a lot of our listeners, look, I'm reading all your comments or a lot of your comments coming in on social media. And I'm seeing that a lot of people are uncomfortable maybe with the situation. They are uncomfortable with what's happening. And that's you have every right to be that way. You can't forget what's happened. You just have to go in with some point of reference and hope for the best.
You hope for the best. And strong language, sanctions, diplomatic pressure, limiting your diplomatic doublespeak. These are things that really, if anything, can prevent us from going to war. It's this kind of tough stance and honest, candid negotiations and diplomatic pressure as well as economic sanctions. These are the things that might keep us from war. President Trump was accused all last year that he was going to lead us into a war.
Right.
God forbid that should happen. But his tough stance and his whole style has really moved us away from war at this point as far as North Korea goes. And so there's something to be said for the abandonment of strategic patience and calling our enemies for who they are and really being a friend to our friends and being a formidable adversary to those who stand against us and against freedoms in the West. And President Trump's methodology this week is proof. It gets results. It is working.
Yeah, there's a comment that came in from Dorothy. She's again talking kind of about the situation with Israel. She said, I don't think it's a coincidence that taking a stand with Israel has led to such great things globally. And what I think you're saying is not only just making a stand with Israel, but just taking a stand, just being there and saying, yeah, we're going to be maybe a little bit of the America that we once were, and then also progress, move forward in the way you have these talks and these negotiations, because you probably wouldn't have seen even President Bush, W. Bush, as liked as a lot of our prior listeners did, doing these kind of meetings with these kind of leaders. You know, it was very much a, we don't talk to terrorists, don't negotiate with terrorists. And I agree with that, but you probably would not have seen him sitting down with Kim Jong-un. We're getting to the point where he can make that happen. Mm-hmm. You know, this is, again, a pretty wild time. A lot of comments are coming in from a lot of people around the world. I want to hear your voice though, too, because in the next segment of the broadcast, I try to take as many calls as I can. That's at 1-800-684-3110. Again, that's 1-800-684-3110. In relation to North Korea, Jim just put, still skeptical about the motives of North Korea. This meeting with our president will show a lot. Yeah, there is that. We'll learn a lot from this meeting. Sort of on a neutral playing ground in Singapore. We haven't seen, you know, the thing about this, though, Kim Jong-un had not really, he had not left the country really at all until just a few days ago. So he had never left country since he assumed power until just a few weeks ago, when you now see him, he's going to China, he's making multiple. You have people like Pompeo coming and meeting with him and meeting with their officials. Also, look at your news. Remember, just a few days ago, they were saying that Pompeo was missing and stalling and nothing was happening. Yeah, I wonder why. I wonder why you thought, oh, we don't know where Mike Pompeo is, what he's doing. I don't know, negotiating the release of three hostages in North Korea. And then setting up a meeting with the president and the leader of this world to try to bring, as the president said, to quote, world peace. Something you don't expect to hear coming out of anything related to North Korea. And then the North Korean press celebrating essentially our president saying that he got this job done. It is, again, it's crazy. It is a crazy time, but it is exciting. And it should be exciting to see what's happening. Now, obviously, we're not going to not draw attention to what's happening in Iran and Israel. That is a real situation. That is something that is not to be laughed at, something to be joked at, not something to be celebrated. But we do need to be cognizant of what's happening there. Because, Wes, as we head into the break, this could just be the beginning of a major escalation.
Yes, it really could be. The first time that Iran has directly attacked Israel in a very long time, showing their true colors, and Israel striking back at Iran and Syria.
Yes, we need to be cognizant of what's happening there, and we are going to take some of those calls and comments in our next segment. Again, the phone lines are open for you. If you're watching online, give me a call, because I would really appreciate it. I'd love to hear your voice, because I want to know what you all think from around the country and around the world online. 1-800-684-3110. Once again, 1-800-684-3110 as we head into the final segment of the day.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. As you know, Pastor Andrew is facing charges of, quote, Christianization, on trial for simply living out his Christian faith. He could spend the rest of his life in a Turkish prison. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're aggressively advocating for Pastor Andrew's freedom. We've mobilized our international offices. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved, and we've submitted a critical legal document to the United Nations. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at aclj.org.
back to Jay Sekulow Live. I'm Logan Sekulow, sitting here for my dad for the final segment of the day, where I try to take as many calls as possible. But right now, the phone lines are lit up, and our call screeners are doing their best to get through them. So we'll take those calls in just a minute. We did get a comment come in during the break from Linda on Facebook. And again, you can watch our show on Facebook. Linda said, can you explain why it will take so long for the new sanctions on Iran? Now, that's something that I think Than Bennett would be an expert on. So, Than, tell us about why this is such a process. And we know coming out of Washington, nothing moves fast.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is, Logan, it's not going to take that long. And if you look directly at the presidential memorandum that accompanied the president's order to begin sanctions, he actually ordered the relevant secretaries to begin immediately putting sanctions back in place and gave them a deadline of 180 days to accomplish them all. There's a couple of things at play here, Logan. First of all, various levels of the sanctions expire at different rolling deadlines, so they come up for renewal at different times. But the other piece here is, when you're putting a sanction back in place, it's not like flipping a light switch. It's generally freezing assets, it's restricting banking channels, it's doing things of that nature. So they do take a little bit of time to put in place, but I actually thought the 180-day deadline was a pretty short deadline. And yeah, also, the instruction from the president to immediately begin, they won't all take 180 days. Some of those are already starting to be put in place now. The squeeze on Iran is already happening.
Right. So, I mean, it's not as slow as you may think. 180 days right. to you may sound like nothing, but in politics, that is about a day. You know, they always say, Wes Aprici says, you know, they always say like a million years is a day in the Lord's eyes, or something like that. This is the same thing. Six months in the world of Washington is about a day. It's about a day for normal human beings. So that's not a bad thing, the fact that it's only going to be a couple months. So take that in somewhat as a victory. Let's move on. Let's take some calls. Some calls are on Iran, some are on North Korea. We're going to mix it up, take a few of each. Let's go to Patrick first in Virginia. Patrick, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding, but thanks for calling.
Hey, how are you doing? My comment real quick is I remain skeptical. I think the deal will go through, but I wonder if it's a ploy by North Korea and China to play nice to get us out of the region as much as possible.
Yeah, it really is. Could be that, Patrick. We hope that it's not. But that's why President Trump has said going into this that, unlike what we've done for the last 25, 30 years, we are not going to give concessions up front, that they need to be willing to give up their nuclear weapons and allow people to inspect the weapons that they're being dismantled. And that until they do that, the president is saying we're not giving them anything. I think if we were to go in as we've done in the past and, you know, give them food and fuel and take away the sanctions because they promised to give up the weapons, I think you're exactly right. And one of the things that some people have intimated is that they want us to remove the 38 or 40,000 U.S. troops from the South Korean peninsula as a part of this. I don't know if that will ever happen, but the president has made it clear that will not happen at the beginning of this negotiation. It'll only happen after they denuclearize, and he is willing to walk away from the table.
Yeah, we got a comment, and it's related to this situation in North Korea as well, but it's from Terry. And she's actually saying, Logan, with your background being in media, could you weigh in on what would take for finally the mainstream media to start reporting the wins, the progress of this administration? Unfortunately, and I'm just going to be as honest as I can be, that's just not going to happen. It's just not. It doesn't fit the narrative. It doesn't fit the story. I'm not calling fake news and saying all this stuff, but it's just true. And I thought this would be one of those topics where you go, okay, how can anyone deny it? People are calling. Unbiased 90 journalists are calling for the Nobel Peace Prize potentially for the president if he's able to work things out between North and South Korea. But you have what Wes was saying on CNN, essentially saying, oh, he showed up to the hostages getting off the plane at grandstanding, trying to make a photo op. Are you kidding me? It's 2 o'clock in the morning. It's not like a lot of people are watching the news. Hate to break it to you, the ratings, 2 o'clock in the morning, not that high. So yeah, we get to see the clip, they'll replay it, but you're not talking about something that a lot of people are probably staying up to watch. And you know what? In a lot of situations like this, you feel like they would have. You feel like you would have actually seen this covered more, where people were like, this is must-see TV to see these North Korean prisoners, hostages, being released. So stay up and watch it like you would election coverage. Stay up and watch it like you would if, you know, the World Series went into the 15th inning, you know, into overtime. But you don't. You know why? Because it's not covered that way. It's not treated in the way that it probably should have been. And I can say I'm to blame as well. I didn't stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning to watch it, and I knew what time it was. Why? Because it's just not the way media works these days, not the way media's covered. So unfortunately, Terry, that's why there's shows like this and other shows that are on this network, wherever you're listening, and other, you know, broadcasts and other channels that do at least try to give you not only the just straightforward what's happening, but from a point of view that you can relate to and connect to, where you don't think it's grandstanding for the leader of the free world, for the commander-in-chief to go greet hostages being released from a country where the president of that country, of the leader of that country, has not left his country in his entire reign because of how strict they are. So I'm sorry, Terry. I know you kind of hit a hot button issue with me, but it's just the truth. Let's take a couple more calls, and I'm going to take a sip of drink. Let's go. And by drink, I mean whatever this lemonade is that some reason I have. Let's go to Fran, who's calling in Indianapolis. Fran, you're on the air.
Hello. Yes. My comment is I wondered if you would address the part that Mike Pompeo has played in this and the fact that he was over there, I think, before even his confirmation. And there wasn't a lot of talk about it, but they said he's been there doing negotiations. And I just wonder if you think this would have happened without his the part that he's
sure.
played in it.
Now, Fan, you were pretty familiar with Mike Pompeo. He's been on this broadcast before. But how do you feel that his move into this new position has really affected what's going on in D.C. and around the world?
Yeah, it's been extremely pivotal, Logan. I would say second only to the President of the United States. I mean, Secretary Pompeo is the one that's had multiple face-to-face meetings with Kim Jong-un. That's unprecedented. He's the one that actually went over and got the hostages and flew back with them. You know, you had the New York Times making fun of him for being thousands of miles away, yet he was the one on the plane bringing right. them home. But, Logan, we said this beforehand. We said that if the president was going to have the ability to come up with a diplomatic solution, he would need his top diplomatic officials on the field. And first and foremost among those is a secretary of state that speaks with the same voice. And, frankly, I think that's Mike Pompeo. He's been on the job, what, 2 weeks now? And these are the accomplishments that he has?
Pretty
I think
good.
He's been extremely pivotal. Yeah,
pretty
great.
Good. Yep, and there's comments coming in. You know, this is something that I think is pretty interesting we'll put in there. You know, we've been saying for the last year how important it is for the president to get his team in place. Harry, and how you know the Democrats and all those on the left wanted to block this, but now that you see, as the pieces are starting to come together, the successes that can be had.
Absolutely. So we have suggested that it's very, very important to confirm Mike Pompeo. He has now been confirmed. It's equally important to confirm Gina Haspel as director of the CIA. But it's also important for listeners to continue to place pressure on the Republicans in Congress to accelerate the confirmation process. There are a number of judges and other officials who are languishing in the Senate. They need to be confirmed and confirmed immediately.
Hey, we got a couple calls that are still up. We're going to try our best to get to, but at least get to one of them. Let's go to Tony first. With a comment about Syria, I think it's important we quickly address. Tony, running out of time. I'm sorry for your hold. Go ahead.
No, that's all right, Logan. I'm just wondering, with the way now Iran's showing its true colors and the brazenness of their attacks, at what point would they ever start to actually target installations in Iran itself?
Wes, can you give a brief?
Yeah, that has happened in the past. Israel has struck targets in Iran. It's been a few years since that happened. The president has warned Iran that if they start their nuclear program, there will be severe consequences. That is always a possibility. Don't know if it's a likelihood or not.
All right, that's going to do it for today's show. I want to thank everyone who's helped me out today as I covered the show. Thank you, Stan Bennett, Wes Smith, Harry Hutchinson, all of our radio team and all of our video team. We will have a new show tomorrow, so make sure you tune in. Again, stay up to date with everything we do here on the ACLJ. Go to aclj.org, subscribe to the JSecular Life podcast, download the ACLJ app bevel in the App Store. We'll talk to you.
The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at aclj.org.